Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Muriel Bowser. I represent the District of Columbia on the Metro Board of Directors, and I am also the chairwoman of the Committee on Planning, Program Development, and Real Estate. Today is April 11th, and it's 9 a.m., and we are located in the committee room for the Metro Board of Directors. I'm calling this meeting to order. It's a regularly scheduled meeting of this committee, and I would like to recognize the presence of a quorum with all jurisdictions represented, Mr. Acosta for the federal government, Ms. Artis Hancher-Cohen, the vice chair and the representative for Maryland, and Ms. Mary Hines, the representative for the Commonwealth of Agenda. I would like to ask for a motion to approve the agenda that's before us.
So moved.
Mr. Acosta and Ms. Hines seconded the motion. All those in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? The ayes have it, and the agenda is approved. You also have before you the minutes from last month's meeting of March 14th. I'll entertain a motion to approve. Ms. Hines moves.
Second.
And Mr. Acosta seconds. Is there any discussion, corrections, any additions to the minutes? All those in favor say aye. Aye. Any opposed? The ayes have it, and the minutes from last month's meeting of March 14th are approved. I would like to also recognize Mr. Doherty to provide the safety contact for today's meeting.
Thank you. Good morning, Chair Bowser, members of the board. This month is Distracted Driving Awareness Month, and the National Safety Council has published a great deal of information. But I'd like to share with you a few things to draw for your attention. Studies by the National Highway Safety Administration and the Virginia Tech Transportation Institute have found that 80% of crashes and 65% of near crashes occur because a driver was distracted within 3 seconds before the crash. We know that talking on cell phones and texting is distracting. Look at the many other forms of distraction that all of us are guilty of. Eating. How often do you grab a fast food bite because we're in a hurry? That requires us to open packages, make sure we don't spill such beverages as coffee or anything else hot, reaching over for food or even wiping our hands. Conversation. Whether passengers are young or old, in the front or back seats, loud or quiet talking can make you concentrate on the conversation instead of the road. Getting into an argument can prove to be the worst. But so can just a stimulating conversation be a distraction. Turning, looking at, or adjusting instruments. This could mean moving the rear view mirrors, dialing the radio, checking CDs or iPods, changing the air conditioning or heat settings in your car. Personal grooming. You leave the house late and haven't shaved or put on your makeup or combed your hair. Something loose in the car. It can be a wandering pet. We all see folks with various pets on their laps between them and the steering wheel, an annoying bug, an active child, something falling, all can force you to concentrate on them instead of the road. Curiosity, you want to read a billboard, look at why there's some police activity on the side of the road or a construction site, and just paying attention to any potential obstacle. Reading, this may seem so obvious, it's ridiculous, but haven't you seen drivers looking at maps, checking a computer or actually reading a newspaper or Kindle while driving at 65 miles per hour? Casualness, the drive has become so easy that you open the window, put out your arm, lounge or sing along with a radio so that your concentration is slipping. And also smoking, for those that, some that still smoke, lighting a cigarette, opening a window, watching for falling ashes, or looking for the ashtray. Highway officials say, expect the unexpected. As do we. Watch out for other drivers who may be distracted. You see the person next to you texting, whatever the case may be, so often. They specifically cite three types of distractions. Visual, which means eyes off the road, cognitive, mind off the road, and manual, hands off the steering wheel. So please pay attention while driving and avoid distractions so that we can all stay safe. And on our emergency alarm, in the event the alarm goes off, we'd ask that you exit through one of the exits, either to my left, behind us, across the street, and we can still see the nut and bolt over there at the National Building Museum. Just gather there so we can make sure that everyone is accounted for. That concludes the safety contact. Chair Bowser, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Doherty. That was an excellent summary of things that we should all pay attention to, and I hope that we're sharing that information on our websites, and I'd certainly be willing to do it to all of my contacts as well, because I think you're right that we take for granted our drive and do so many of the things that you talked about. So distraction is not just texting or being on the phone, but it's many other daily activities that we try to cram into our regular commutes. So thank you for that. And people can avoid it altogether and do those things on the metro in the morning. So they can just skip the drive altogether. And if they want to read the newspaper, they can do it comfortably on a metro ride. So
great.
Thank you for that. So let's move to today's agenda. And first, we have three items on the agenda today. The first two for approval. The first is for approval of an amendment to the development agreement. And the second is also requesting the approval of a warehouse lease. And the last item is an information item for today, which will be an action item for next month. So let me first turn to Mr. Wall, who will discuss the needed amendment for the Twin Brook Joint Development Agreement.
Thank you, Chairman Bowser, and good morning to the committee. The first item today that we have is a presentation to the committee for the approval and amendment to the Twin Brook Joint Development Agreement. The purpose of this action is to move the closing date of Phase 1B lease to June 2013 and also to postpone negotiation of terms for Phase 3 to November of 2013. The site plan behind me shows an overview of the Twin Brook development, including all phases and the two commuter parking garages that were built by the developer. Phase 1A is complete, and it's located in the northeastern corner of the project. Phase 1B is just below 1A, and the lease for this phase is what would begin in June of this year. The garage that was recently completed for Metro is located on the west side of the tracks in the far northwest corner of the property. The next slide shows a summary of the current and proposed phasing for the project. As indicated earlier, Phase 1A of the project is complete. The Phase 1B lease will begin approximately 6 months later than originally anticipated, and Phase 2A, 2B would proceed as scheduled, and we're going to defer negotiation of Phase 3A and 3B to later this year. The issues that have driven this change is we have identified issues with the construction of the replacement Twin Brook garage, which was the responsibility of the developer. Technical review and the corrective plan is still underway, but given the nature of the structure and the conditions of the cracking evidence to date, a solution appears achievable. We've been working with the developer very closely and their contractors to arrive at an acceptable solution that would include, among other elements, remediation, as well as an extended warranty period for this garage. The Phase 1B lease will not be executed, however, until Metro certifies that the West Garage is substantially complete and ready for use, with only minor punch list items remaining to be finished, or the developer has provided a complete West Garage remediation plan that's been approved by Metro, and a plan for temporary replacement parking that's also approved by Metro. It is our recommendation that the committee approve the amendment to the Joint Development Agreement to extend the closing date of Phase 1B to June 2013, and to extend the renegotiation for 3A and 3B to November 30th, 2013. Any questions, please?
Any questions from members? Ms. Artis, Ms. Hampshire-Cohen?
No, Madam Chair, I just wanted to move approval.
Thank you. There's a motion to approve.
Second.
Mr. Acosta seconds. Discussion, I'll just put on, just to confirm, Mr. Wall, that the county officials have been apprised of this, and do they have any questions or concerns?
We have not received any concerns or questions from the county. Correct.
And they've been apprised of this motion to extend?
Correct, yes.
Okay. Those are my questions. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? The ayes have it, and the committee recommends approval to the entire board. Mr. Wall, do you want to move to the second item regarding the Metro warehouse lease?
Our second item this morning is a request for board approval to negotiate and execute a warehouse lease in Alexandria, Virginia. The warehouse is located at 6100 Farrington Avenue in Alexandria. It's actually in Fairfax County, about two blocks just west of the city limits, comprised of about 81,000 square feet, as well as a two-acre surface lot. The space is needed to store capital spare parts that are acquired from major equipment and construction contracts. As a background, Metro currently has no vacant warehouse space. Current capital improvement projects will generate thousands of spare parts. Some of the major projects generating this need include ATC spares, Red Line contract spares, as well as Silver Line Phase 1 spares. The term of this proposed lease is for 10 years with an estimated lease cost of $8.5 million over the life of the 10-year period. A contract appraisal for the space was completed in March of 2013. It is staff recommendation that the board approve negotiation execution of this warehouse lease at 6100 Farrington Avenue. Any questions, please?
Mr. Costa?
I had a quick question. I know that this lease is for 10 years. I was wondering if this was, number one, a permanent need for the agency, and number two, if this has been incorporated in our capital improvements planning, and if we at some point in time would want to either buy a warehouse for the purposes of storing these things in the long term.
This is for our immediate needs in terms of these projects are completing now, and this material needs a place to go. So this is for this 10-year term. Separate from this action, we are looking at broader space needs for WMATA, both office as well as warehouse space. As part of that analysis, we'll definitely look at lease versus buy for the permanent needs for the agency.
Ms. Amtrak Collins.
What were the priority considerations for determining the location?
Largely availability of the space, proximity to the staff that manages the space. The staff is located at the Alexandria Rail Yard, which is about a half a mile to a mile away from this location. It also provides great access in terms of the beltway for getting to other locations, as well as to get to the new Silver Line area.
And Mr. Wall, will you just confirm that this is in a warehouse district? This isn't, we're not putting a warehouse next to something where it could be developed more productively?
Correct. This is an existing industrial area, an existing warehouse building along with the surface lot that is zoned for industrial use and warehouse use.
And this represents a private deal between Metro and a private landowner. There's no municipality involved?
That's correct.
Okay. I will actually entertain a motion to approve.
Madam Chair, I'm happy to move the approval of this.
Thank you, Ms. Hines and Ms. Hampshire Collins. Seconds. Any further discussion, questions? So all those in favor of approving this lease for warehouse space, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All the members present voted to recommend this to the entire board. So, Mr. Wall, will we now move to the next agenda item, which represents some work on behalf of your staff, and certainly members of the board are interested to make sure that our joint development processes and guidelines are meeting our contemporary needs, but also incorporating the work that our governance committee has done with regard to openness in, you know, updating our ethics guidelines as well. So what we've asked you to do is to walk through the work that you and your staff have done also in reviewing the guidelines, but also in the outreach to our stakeholders who interact with this process, and make note of the suggested changes that you think we should make at this point. We're also going to leave a public record open between now and our next meeting so that anybody involved in the process may put their comments on note, and then we're going to ask the board to the committee and then the board to approve them next month. Thank you, Mr. Wall.
Thank you, Chairman Bowser. Our final item this morning is to present to the board suggested changes to Metro's joint development policies and guidelines. The purpose is to present this information for information to the board as well as to the public to highlight some of the major changes that we're proposing be incorporated in the next revision of the guidelines. As background, the joint development policies and guidelines were last updated in 2008. Since that time, the board has launched work on a new strategic plan. The board has adopted new ethics guidelines, and improving economic conditions are resulting in increased interest from developers seeking to acquire Metro property for development. As we contemplate issuing new solicitations in the coming months, we want to ensure that we implement these projects in a manner that is consistent with the new proposed policies. Earlier this year, the board requested that staff focus on revisions in the following areas: guidelines relating to the transfer development agreements, the overall goals of the policies, providing policies that were noted previously but never completed, specifically affordable housing, requiring enhanced identification of development team members and participants, identifying any elements of the policies that may be overly burdensome for developers, and finally referencing the board's recently adopted code of ethics as part of the joint development guidelines. We've addressed these focus areas in addition to making a number of other updates to address minor inconsistencies as well as outdated items that are in the policies. The policies now incorporate a stated affordable housing policy. To summarize, it will be WMATA's policy to require developers to comply with the minimum affordable housing requirements of the jurisdiction in which a property is located. To maximize value to WMATA, we will encourage those developers to create creative financing to help achieve local jurisdiction affordable housing requirements. We're requiring that developers now identify all individuals serving as partners, principals, project leaders, or others who have an active role in project management or decision making. This disclosure will be required as part of a developer's initial response and solicitation, as well as any change or update where board action might be required. This information will help the board facilitate identifying any potential conflicts of interest in their evaluation of development projects. The other major addition to the policies relate to transfers of development agreements. Depending on whether a project is still in the development period or if development is complete, developers will be required to seek approval or notification to Metro of such changes. These changes will require that any new members also are in good standing and that they also complete the same disclosure requirements regarding team composition. In reviewing these policies, we also reached out to a handful of our current development partners to gain their perspective on how burdensome aspects of the policies might be addressed. However, much of the feedback dealt with how we implement the policies rather than the actual policies themselves. As an example, multiple developers mentioned a need for greater alignment of interest between Metro and the developer to help improve problem-solving and issue resolution. These types of efforts are areas of focus that the real estate team has been trying to improve upon over the past several months, but we still have work to do and will continue to improve as we go forward. In our proposed revisions, we've also more clearly laid out responsibilities of the WMATA Board of Directors as it relates to joint development, and we include a requirement that all those responsibilities be carried out in compliance with the board's code of ethics. Other updates include increasing the focus on internal screening of potential properties and increased coordination with local jurisdictions at the beginning of the process, updating terminology to modern terms, and correcting inconsistencies in the terms within the policies. We see that there will be three major benefits of updating the policies. One, aligning the joint development policies with Metro's strategic plan, creating a stronger linkage with our ethics guidelines, and providing greater transparency to the development community and all other stakeholders regarding the joint development process. As next steps, following today's presentation, the proposed revisions to the joint development guidelines will be available for comment by the public. They're currently available on the WMATA board information page on our public website. We'll review and incorporate any changes that come from the public or the board or developers, and we'll come back to the board in June to seek approval for the final proposed guideline changes. Any questions, please?
Questions from the members? There are, and you have included in your package, a redlined version of the changes to the actual guidelines. And so feel free to point to any of the sections that you have questions about. Ms. Hines?
Thanks, Ms. Bowser. The point that I have been thinking about and focusing on is really kind of encapsulated if you start on page 5, where you've done a very nice job of laying out more specifically the role of the board. And then my concern moves over into 5.3 on the next page, which talks about local jurisdictions. And so let me see if I can make my point succinctly. So there really are two issues here. One is, how does the board act as a corporate board, which I think is 5.1. And then there is an issue about how do individual board members whose jurisdiction a project may be happening in, how are they captured? So if I were to suggest a place of change, It is to make that distinction clearer and better for us. So, for instance, at the end of 5.1, where you very properly place the reference to the Code of Ethics, it's not that the board has to comply with it. It's that each member has to comply as they act in the corporate manner. But the greater confusion for me actually comes in 5.3 on page 6 about in the middle of that big paragraph at the bottom of the page where it's talking about that WMATA needs to work with the local jurisdictions. And then it goes on to say consultation, coordination, and collaboration with local jurisdictions means coordinated efforts with designated representatives of the executive branch, an appropriate or designated representative of the legislative branch, and where it may be an independent agency, appropriate representatives of the land use planning. And then if you go on page 7 in number 3, it says local jurisdictions are asked to designate a person or office as the liaison to WMATA for joint development activities. This is where the opportunity for absolute confusion, I think, reigns about who WMATA is actually talking to and who is the lead for the jurisdiction. And so I think that perhaps the fix is to, in number 3, somehow, not that local jurisdictions are asked, but local jurisdictions must designate in order for this to move forward, quite honestly. It's in the jurisdiction's best interest that it move forward, but this is the place where confusion can happen and where our role as individual board members could be confused for lead for the jurisdiction. And that is the part that I want everybody to be clear on. I'm not saying it's inappropriate for a board member to be the lead, but everybody needs to know. There can't be confusion. And so there's an onus on the jurisdiction, I think, to say who's that person or office or whatever that they are saying is the person who's going to be their lead in the conversation.
Do you think the compact provides some, gives us a roadmap for that?
I don't know that I know the compact absolutely well enough to answer that, Ms. Bowser.
Okay. So why don't you tell us, Stan, how, in your words, these words are a little bit more confusing. Maybe we should use a real-world example. So I just asked Stan, for example, in making the recommendation for this change to Twin Brook, it's always my question, what does the jurisdiction have to say about it? So why don't you walk us through, in the case of a real-world example, of what that looks like from your team's point of view?
I can talk more greatly about Prince George's County, where we've been very active on recent projects. And our outreach to the county is primarily with the Office of the County Executive and the deputies that are in charge of economic development and planning in that county. They are our primary points of contact as it relates to development projects in the county. We also consult with council members relating to projects that are in their particular district, as well as with local planning, the parks and planning in the county, with regard to planning objectives as relates to our projects. So there's three elements that we interact with in that county. But I wouldn't say today that there is one person that's designated as having kind of veto power over the other three. So I think that would be very valuable for staff to have a better clarity over who that exact person might be in any particular jurisdiction. In the District of Columbia, it's a similar process that we work with the Office of the Deputy Mayor for Planning and Economic Development, Office of Planning, as well as reaching out to council members within any particular council or jurisdiction where a project is located. So it varies. We try to be as inclusive as possible, but we don't currently have that single point of contact or single individual that's identified as being the person for Prince George's County or the person for the district or the person for Montgomery. So
how
we would
approach
actually,
it in the Virginia jurisdictions?
Similar process in terms of working with, case of Arlington County, with DDOT staff as well as with planning staff. In the city of Alexander, we're meeting with planning staff as well as staff from the Office of the City Manager. So it varies by jurisdiction, but it usually involves executive staff, planning staff, and economic development staff are the three pieces of any discussion. But there's no one single person that trumps the other in those conversations. We try to figure out what the consensus is among those individuals, but there's not a single point of contact.
Okay. So I think that is, and as you just go through even these examples, I see the differences in our jurisdictions, whereas we, or the council, are the signatories to the compact in the District of Columbia, and our OP is not independent from our deputy mayor for economic development, where I think that is the case in some of the other jurisdictions. It's all very different, and at the end of the day, it's the board member who's going to vote and can accept those recommendations or not. Does anybody else have any comment on Ms. Hines' suggestion that this point in the guidelines should ask for a person or an office to be the spokesperson in joint development projects for the individual jurisdictions?
Well, I think it's a great recommendation. Mary, but you said something in your initial comments that has lingered with me when you said, you know, you're not suggesting that there's a prohibition that a board member is the lead person. And for me, I wonder under what circumstance would it be appropriate for a board member to be the point person representing the jurisdiction when we're talking about working through the issues. I mean, obviously, we represent various jurisdictions, but we have an obligation to the corporate body, WMATA. And I think if we have a board member designated as the lead person on a particular project, for me, that's an uncomfortable place. I mean, that's the slippery slope, I believe. But again, I haven't had, you know, sufficient experience with various development projects that have gone through Metro that involved board members, but we're not staff, we're board members.
Any other comments? So why don't we spend some time between this month and next month, kind of reach, I will hear from some staff, the key agencies that are listed out in with whom you touch base in making your recommendations. I think it's also important to see what that might mean for what compact implications that might have. For example, as the compact representative for the district, the Council of the District of Columbia, we would have no interest in relinquishing our ability to speak to and to vote on these issues. So I think that, and I know it's different for Maryland and Virginia, that you have a different bodies in between you. So I think that bears for some additional discussion, and I'm happy to have like a smaller conversation about it to see what that could mean for the joint development guidelines.
Well, and Ms. Bowser, if I might, I want to make it clear that I'm raising this partially because I think we should spend a little time figuring this out. And I think, you know, in my jurisdiction and in Alexandria, all board members run at large. So we don't, you know, each of the five on my board cares equally about every place in the county, whereas other places you've got districts or, you know, different things where, and different arrangements. So you're absolutely right that it's complicated, but I think we do need among ourselves and for staff to have clarity about what we're saying relative to us. And really, that's the point I'm going at, is clarity. Not that it's a ban or a prohibition, but that everybody's clear so that we don't get ourselves into confusion over what role people are playing in any particular moment when
sure.
We wear multiple hats.
So I think there we could make the language in 5.3 more clear to, I think it tries to get at that, but it's a little opaque, and so let's make it more direct. I think there's also, and there are even quotes in here, consultation, coordination, and collaboration, and what exactly that means. And so let's spend some time working on those issues. I have a question, Mr. Wall. I noticed that on page 9, and under section 5.4, that staff has added a section that says, WMATA encourages developers to include disadvantaged business enterprises in their joint development projects and will assist developers in identifying such firms. Can you speak a little bit more about that? And maybe more broadly, and perhaps Rich will want to jump in here, how does that reflect WMATA's procurement policies toward doing business with DBEs?
First, it's not a new addition. It was still in the document. It was moved from a later section of the document.
Got it.
So it's always been in here, but we moved it here to be in the same area as the other developer requirements. As to how it relates to the procurement policies, we have not yet researched exactly how this aligns with WMATA's broader procurement policies, but it's something we can actually add more detail to.
Okay. Rich, can you add anything to that?
Stan's right. It hasn't been aligned with the procurement policies. We do go through a goal-setting analysis for procurement and come up with, you know, goals and then try to live with those goals and meet them. So we can look at that.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Bowser, I have one other question.
Please.
Back on page 5. In number 5, under 5.1, I'm just trying to understand how this might work. We have a joint development agreement that where the developer is working with the local jurisdiction. They're going through whatever their site plan review process is, which often involves a public hearing. This says that WMATA would also have a public hearing. Is that, am I reading this right, Mr. Wall?
That's correct. And this refers to a compact public hearing where
okay.
we're making changes to our transit facilities. Yeah. That's what number 5 is
okay.
relating to.
We might want to insert compact then.
Now, are there any changes to the terms of the length of time that solicitations can be on the street and considered, and also changes to, like we did today, we've extended the time frame that a development can commence or complete. Have you made any recommendations to change that?
What we would plan to do is, as part of any term sheet, we would identify all of the follow-on steps in terms of the time frame for completing a development from award to commencing construction. We would also update the board on an annual basis on the status of joint development solicitations from the prior year. So we've just approved or received board approval for the 11 potential solicitations. When we come back to the board next spring, we'll report back on what the status is of those solicitations. That's our proposed approach.
Okay. And finally, I know that you are in your conversations that the need to be more flexible in implementation of the guidelines has come up. How we deal with replacement of parking has come up as an issue as well. So tell me what your thinking is in addressing those issues.
One major effort that we're trying to focus on this year is making sure that we've solved all of our transit needs and functions in advance of issuing solicitation. This is something that has not always happened in the past, in that we've issued a solicitation, brought a developer on board, and tried to make them figure out what we needed. They didn't get it right, and we'd focus on over 3 years and probably 5-10 years trying to figure out how to accommodate our needs when we haven't yet defined them in the first place. So that's one thing that's going to change with the next batch solicitation that will come out this summer, is that we will very clearly and definitively define what we require. We're also starting off a separate effort to look at how we do approach parking as an agency across the board in terms of financing, funding, maintaining, operating, owning that parking, to identify if there might be ways to apply any other industry best practices toward that element of our project. Because that does tend to be the most burdensome part of any of these joint development projects, is replacing existing surface parking with structured parking.
Okay. Are there any other questions for Mr. Wall? Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I commend the outreach to the development community, but I'm curious that we specifically request comments on the draft documents with the various entities you noted. You know, given every jurisdiction is different and there are lots of players who are looking at it from different perspectives, have we specifically solicited comments from the various people we work with in the jurisdictions?
We have not, but staff can work with our government relations group to put a broadcast message out to all of our stakeholders and at JCC to make sure everyone is informed.
So. Thank you.
And I also would like to commend the staff and the committee for being ready to approve the affordable housing policy, which has been in the making for several years. I'll just call everybody's attention. Mr. Wall talked about it. It's on pages 24 and 25, which explicitly says that the authority will comply with the jurisdictional policies around affordable housing. And let me just confirm, Mr. Wall, that the staff will be able to confirm that the proposals are in line with those policies before they advance?
Absolutely. That will be a requirement that the developer does comply with the local jurisdictional requirements. It will be a prerequisite, essentially, to the solicitations.
Okay. So we look forward to the additional outreach that you've committed to today, as well as some additional work around defining the jurisdictional contacts that are outlined, I think, in 5.3, as well as if we can be a little bit more clear about what consultation and coordination means. Okay. I think that those are all the questions on this item. Is there any other business that we have for the committee? Ms. Hampshire-Cole?
Yes, Madam Chair. I'm sure everyone's aware, but I think it's important that we convene shortly after Mr. Walls has been honored by the Washington Business Journal, and I'm sure the board would like to join with the Business Journal and the business and development community in commending our real estate executive. Congratulations.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Congratulations again. So without any other business before the committee, it's 9:37, and we're adjourned.